listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
Well, we're going to hear the Matt Damon, Christian Bale, and James Mangold episode here from the Peterson Museum on such a fine movie. So we got that coming. First, Tommy John. Tommy John is getting extra ballsy this holiday season with an unbelievable offer exclusively for my listeners. 25% off site-wide. Shop their biggest sale. Do it now. Experience the amazing fit and feel of their products, like the breathable, wedgie-proof underwear, ridiculously soft loungewear, guaranteed to fit perfectly. Ladies, first off, you can kiss those panty lines goodbye with the Tommy John underpants, and then you can also upgrade the most comfortable bra on the planet. Guys got the horizontal quick draw fly, so no more fly fishing down there. They're just the best. They're all I wear. I literally, since I got Tommy John, never worn another brand of underpants ever again. Plus, they got the no wedgie guarantee. If you don't love your first pair, they'll give you your money back, but you're going to love them because they are the best. They're Tommy John, right, Chris?
Give the gift of comfort this holiday season with limited edition gifts like loungewear and underwear from Tommy John. Plus, save 25% off site-wide when you go to TommyJohn.com and use the code CARCAST. That's code CARCAST at TommyJohn.com.
Get it on. Got to get on. No choice. Make it on mandate. Get it on. Boy, we're loaded for bear. I mean, Christian Bale, Matt Damon, James Mangold. Come on, people. We'll get to them in 10 seconds. Maybe 55 seconds. First, let me hit betonline.ag. NFL Thanksgiving weekend and college football rivalry games. A lot going on. Visit betonline.ag. Take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Use the promo code PODCAST1 for a 50% sign-up bonus. Matchups. I mean, we got week 13, Buffalo and Dallas, Saints at Atlanta. Thanksgiving Day, we got the Patriots and Houston and San Fran at Baltimore, man. There's a good game. Minnesota at Seattle, there's a good game. Lots of good games coming up. We got $500 in rewards to give out each week to five listeners and a $5,000 season-long charity contest. So join the conversation on Twitter at hashtag SportsNetChallenge, and let's have some fun this weekend, and let's pick a few winners. Use the promo code PODCAST1, receive a 50% sign-up bonus today. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. All right, so here we are, Christian Bale, Matt Damon. Good to see you guys. Ford v. Ferrari, loved the movie.
Thank you.
Loved it. And Christian, pull the mic, sorry, up close to the soup cooler there. I'd worked on a documentary, The 24-Hour War, which is same topic, and also did a Shelby documentary. So I came in loaded with information and sort of worried that I was going to be bumped, and I wasn't. I
Fantastic.
Loved it. So, and everyone I saw it with loved it as well. So congratulations, number one, on knocking it out of the ballpark. And how much into cars or the sport or the hobby were you guys into before you started the film, Matt? You can start.
I wasn't, which I think was a an asset because along with the director, we talked about that. He didn't ever fetishize the cars because he wasn't a car guy, you know. And so it's you're always going just for story. And this is a really wonderful story that I think transcends cars. And so people who aren't car people, I think, will really enjoy it.
Yeah, I totally agree. It was all lot of heart in it. And like, I mean, like any movie, like Rocky wasn't really a boxing movie. It
right.
was a movie about heart and overcoming adversity and all the things. And boxing becomes, pardon the pun, the vehicle to just express all that. So Christian, how about you?
I think more than some, but nothing like you. Like what I loved, it was a very bonding experience. In between my dad and myself, we would watch Formula One when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. One time, got to go to Brands Hatch. Absolutely mind blowing. Loved it. It was era of Alan Prost and Senna and Niki Lauda. Saw Senna tragically, you know, die on the TV. So had that past and was aware of Le Mans. As well. So I knew Shelby, I knew Le Mans, but I didn't know Ken Miles, and I didn't know this story about 66.
Ken Miles, after doing the documentary, I just said, the story is Ken Miles. Like, that's the crazy story. I mean, everyone knew Carroll Shelby. Yeah. He's a household name. Nobody knew Ken Miles, and nobody knew the tragedy of that story. And, you know, I don't want to spoil it, but...
Well, we could have done a whole movie on the ending.
Yeah, on just what happened to Ken Miles and how that works and how people... memories and they move on and you don't even know this character. Even amongst car enthusiasts, I would have to bring up the name Ken Miles, and they didn't know about it. And I thought you did such an amazing job playing him, because he's an interesting, quirky, different kind of guy.
I think it was a real saving grace. You know, the guy was a very strong character. He just would not compromise at all. He was a real purist, racer. He considered himself first and foremost a mechanic. But was a phenomenal racer, and that search for this kind of perfect lap and this purity of experience was like his saving grace, but his absolute Achilles heel as well. He just was constantly shooting himself in the foot, winning battles, losing the war completely, and now getting long in the tooth and not really having any opportunity until Shelby recognizes in his friend, if he would just shut up for once and let Shelby just give him some kind of strategy, then he can put him there. And the fact that these guys bloody did it, you know, and they took on God in the form of Enzo Ferrari, and they bloody won. It's phenomenal.
You know, it's funny. Someone was interviewing me, and they were talking about how mighty Ford was and how small Ferrari was, but I said, you know, Mike Tyson was the smallest heavyweight in his era, and he just knocked everyone's ass out. So Ferrari was Mike Tyson. Like, sure, they were a little boutique company, not that well funded, but they won all the time. So in a way, they were the giant up against Ford, who was physically the giant, but didn't have those wins. It's an incredible story. I know you got to meet Peter Miles.
Yeah.
The son of Ken Miles, which is much of the story revolves around Ken and Peter, and Peter, this, he must be over the moon about this.
I hope so. I do hope so. I watched the film with Peter and with Peter's daughter, and it was obviously really bloody moving. Having seen the film, you'll understand why. For that, and he was so helpful to me in telling me stories about his dad, giving me, you know, personal artifacts and photographs and all of that. He was really generous, and I would be, you know, texting him photographs from the set throughout. You know, yeah, it was wonderful to have him around.
Matt, how much did you know about Shelby? Because I, you know, it's always funny whenever they go, Matt Damon's going to play Carroll Shelby. I go, I know Matt Damon. He can't play Carroll. Then you see him, and he's Carroll Shelby. Like, you became Carroll Shelby.
Yeah, I didn't know a lot. I mean, I obviously knew he's kind of an iconic guy, but I didn't know a lot about him, and I didn't know a lot about him in relation to this story and this relationship that he had with Miles, which I thought was really, you know, it was really the kind of the basis of what I was doing in the movie. I mean, it was interesting to watch, go back and look at stuff on Shelby when he would talk about Miles, and he'd get choked up, and this experience of Le Mans 66, what these guys went through, I mean, it really, I think, stayed with him for the rest of his life. And he would say, you know, Ken Miles, a hell of an engineer. You know, he'd get choked up, you know, and you go like, man, like, God, this is, he's carrying this. You know, when they brought the three cars in together, they didn't know. I don't think they knew that meant Miles wouldn't win. I mean, he thought he was still going to get the Triple Crown. But
sure.
B, you know, even given that, he had all this stuff on, he had to toe the line. Shelby had to toe the line. He had, as Charlie Agape, you said to us, he had, you know, they had put, you know, tens of millions of dollars into this program. And what they thought and what he knew was, I'm going to come back here next year and Ken's going to win next year. Because we're going to win this thing again and again and again. Our car, Charlie, we asked Charlie, when you went over there, they'd already won Sebring, they'd already won Daytona that year.
Charlie Acapo?
Yeah. Charlie Agape.
When Spike interviews you guys, he's not doing a deep dive on Charlie Acapo. I know Charlie Acapo. I know. I've interviewed that guy.
He was around a lot, and he's wonderful.
Well, the thing that's crazy is these guys were doing this
at 19, 20, 21.
Yeah.
So you meet the guy that was Ken Miles' right-hand man, and he's a 63-year-old guy. Like, yeah, you're like, right. He's not old.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
crazy, and he has vivid memories.
Vivid
and he
memories.
He got choked up, of course, talking about Ken when I was interviewing him.
And I said, hey, Charlie, how sure were you when you guys went over there in 66? You know, they were dominating with that car. I said, how sure were you were going to win? And he was like, 100%. I said, really? He said, 100%. If we didn't break down, we were going to win. He goes, that car was just such a thug and they knew it. And so I think to slow Ken down, you know what I mean? It's
yeah.
like it. They all have their own perspective. They all have their own, ideas about why that happened. And it just was like Ford could not. They had put too much money into it to have the story be anything but the Ford
right.
car.
It couldn't but I think also that with Shelby, he did ask Miles many times to do something strategic in a different race.
Right? Yes. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Miles. Always bloody ignored him. Even sometimes he would laugh and be flipping him the bird to Shelby.
Right.
And I think Shelby kind of loved that, you know?
Right.
I think he knew, hey, look, I've got to do my duty. I have to ask. But there's no way Ken's going to do it. And then Ken bloody did it. Why? I think because Ken recognized how much Shelby had put on the line for him and wanted to give gratitude and did think he's still going to win the Triple Crown and did these bloody mind-blowing laps beforehand, only to then find he got screwed over.
Yeah, people don't know you win Daytona, you win Sebring, you win Le Mans, you win the Triple Crown,
right.
sort of like horse racing, and no one had done it in a season up until then. Mm-hmm. Ken was obviously in a position to do that. Mm-hmm. I don't want to give away too much of the story, but you know, if you think about, Matt, when you were saying, you know, they thought they were just going to come back every year and win every year, and
they did.
And rightfully so, and they did. You also think about Bruce McLaren, who did get the win, and he probably thought he was coming back, and then he died a couple years later testing, I think, a Can-Am car. So McLaren, the guy who surged ahead and got the win and blah, 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 he didn't have such a happy ending either mm-hmm. in terms of his life. The thing that's really poetic and interesting is here we are 50 years later, and McLaren, I saw a McLaren car in the parking lot.
Yeah.
I see Shelby cars in the parking lot. Now, Ken Miles is going to be highlighted in this major film. Like, it is, I don't know, it gives you hope. It's kind of interesting that McLaren and Shelby and now Miles 50 years on, and here we are talking about them.
Yeah.
God, I don't think they could have ever imagined that, right?
No, I do hope that Miles becomes more of a common name, you know, because, you know, it was tragic, and he was so bloody talented. And like you said, within racing circles, I actually thought he was better known within racing circles than he is. That actually, many people don't even know him within those circles, and he really deserves. And coming from Britain as well.
Right.
That to be embraced as a bloody national hero for what he did.
And a lot
most
of
people have no idea.
A lot of ancillary people like Phil Remington.
Oh, yeah. He was so essential. You know, there was a triangle. It was really the three of them. And that was something that Peter said to me. He said, please make sure that you give Phil his credit because they could not have done it without him.
I interviewed Dan Gurney just before he passed, and I went down to his place where he's building stuff for SpaceX and everything else. Gurney's and another mm-hmm. amazing story in the film, small role. Oh, his son.
Yeah,
played
Gurney.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he showed me Phil Remington's workbench, who had just passed. I mean, he made it late. He said, that's where he worked for me. He still, we haven't touched his workspace. God, it's
there's so much to this story.
I know.
Mean, you could do. There is actually a, I think, Legendary or somebody has the rights to one of the books that kind of covers documents this time. And I think they were still talking about doing a whole extended series on it. And they could totally still do it. I mean,
Go Like Hell.
Yeah, Go Like Hell. I mean, because there's so many stories. I mean, the one drawback to doing a two and a half hour movie is like you got to choose. You got to, and there's so, it's so full of different, you know, the great colorful characters and really interesting people. I mean, you could really do extended run of this. Of
you know,
this era.
It's an onion, and you just there's something. I did a movie called "Winning the Racing Life" of Paul Newman, and in the middle of that movie, we discovered a guy named Willie T. Ribbs, first African American driver at Indianapolis, and then did our next one about him. Like, as you're making a doc about this one thing, you discover all these other stories, and they're all worth telling. It's just you got to pick and choose, because who's got the time to do it all? Are you guys, is there Oscar talk here? I mean, the movie was, I'll tell you, I saw the movie. Obviously, I knew everything going into the movie, and then I really loved the movie, but then I thought, maybe I love it like everyone thinks their kids are cute. Some of them are pigs, let's be honest.
They all look like Winston Churchill.
Yeah, but maybe this is just a father thinking his daughter should win the Miss Florida competition. Look,
we just do our thing, and then it's up to other people to decide.
So, but I got back and I was like, I don't know. I love this movie, but I don't know if I'm just preloaded to love it. And I looked on Rotten Tomatoes; it's 88% last time I checked.
Oh, I didn't even know they had anything up yet.
Oh, 60 folks have weighed in. And I got to tell you, in this woke area we're living in now, this all white, all male, all straight cast getting to 88% on Rotten Tomatoes, not too shabby. And they don't like car movies either,
right? Because they're gas guzzling.
Yeah, you're just wasting a bunch of vulcanized.
That was actually a question
fuel.
We got a lot in France when we were in France.
We kept being asked, "Is it appropriate in this era with Greta Thunberg and the climate change and everything like that that we made a film about cars that run on gas?"
Right. Kristen said, should we go back and make them electric?
Why didn't you guys do Cool Runnings 3? They were just propelled by gravity. So I thought to myself, a really high score in a woke period where we don't like gas and petrol fuel being burned and all that kind of stuff, that says a lot. So there, and again, critics don't traditionally like car movies as much as, other human stories. So there's got to be some discussion or some thought. I don't know if you guys are allowed to talk about it.
We don't discuss. We're not involved in any discussions about that.
But someone's going to put you for.
Well, someone does it, but nobody talks with us about it.
No, it just happens.
Do they talk with you about it?
No.
It's not just me they ignore.
But I never thought of this movie that way. Like, there's kind of an award season, which is, the towards the end of the year. And this movie was supposed to come out in June.
Right.
And they just held on to it. And so I always just read it. I thought it was such a crowd-pleasing, like such a fun story and such an interesting story, and one that I didn't know and one that was really relatable. And that was kind of as far as I got with it. And so I'm glad it's being well-received. That's great. But to me, the big win would be if people just see it, go see it. Like, that's – at this stage in my career, like, that's really what I want more than anything. I want people to go, and I want people to like it.
Yeah, I feel the same way. At a certain point, you have enough money and enough stuff, and you just want your work, and you realize, like, we're talking about 10 miles. One day we're going to talk, and Carol Shelby, we're going to talk about the actors who played Ken Miles and Carol Shelby, and we'll all be roasting in hell. So I'll keep a seat open at the table for you guys. I think I'm going to get there first. But ultimately, it's about the work, it's about the body of work, and it's about people walking out of there going, these guys did a great job. And if they kick it back for award season, which they did, which means they're thinking that way, that's just so much gravy.
That's a great problem to have.
They're telling me to bring it home, but so I'll just keep it another 23 minutes. I got to tell you, I love this film. I thought you guys both knocked it out of the ballpark. I thought it's so James did a great job of shooting it. It's not just a car show. It really is poetic. I mean, the shots, all the shots were just, you could tell in a way it's better to have a person like James direct a non-car guy. Like, sometimes you get the Fast and Furious guys to do the things, you miss the artistry part.
Right.
So in a way it was even better. I thought it was amazing, and so kudos to both of you.
Thanks.
And if you want to see Peter Miles and you want to see that 9:35 at Laguna Seca, I'll be there too.
When is that going to be?
It's the middle of August. Single year they have the Rolex Historics over there, and all those guys come out, and we all race our cars.
Oh, great.
That's awesome.
So one more plug. In theaters Friday, November 15th, Ford v. Ferrari, and what a story. Great job, guys.
Right. Cheers, mate.
Thanks, Adam.
Castrol Edge, stronger under pressure. Engines can lose up to 10% of performance due to friction. Castrol Edge with fluid titanium transforms under pressure. Three times!
Three times, fool!
Stronger against breakdown than leading full synthetic oils. It is the best. It is Castrol Edge, formulated in ways to exceed the industry standards. It is Castrol Edge. James Mangold, Ford v. Ferrari director, in theaters Friday, November 15th. Saw it. Loved it. Done so many movies. Logan and 310 to Yuma, which I enjoyed so much. Wolverine. Girl Interrupted. I forgot that that was you. So good on you. Good to see you again, James.
Good to see you again, Adam.
I love the film. I had done a documentary on the film, or the theme of the film, and I'd also just finished one on Carroll Shelby. So going in, I was worried that I knew too much.
I knowing you were seeing it, I was worried that you knew too much.
The good news is I really don't know anything. So I enjoyed the hell out of this thing. And I thought
you
did a wonderful job.
You're trying
to
get, you know what you're trying to get? You try and get the details right, of course. But what you're also trying to capture in a dramatic movie that you can't do as much in a documentary is you're trying to recreate a feeling or a vibe or a tone. You're trying to understand something about the personality of these guys that they might hide from a documentary camera, or something they may not show when they're doing an interview like this. You know, you're trying to get, in a way, behind the mask. What are they dealing with? You know, what are they haunted by? What are they chasing? And there's so many interesting aspects to these characters. Obviously, the cars are interesting. But, you know, you think about just Carroll Shelby. He's top-notch racer in 1959, winning Le Mans in an Aston Martin, and suddenly finds out he's got a heart condition and can never race again, cannot get behind the wheel again.
Right.
What does that do? I mean, you can only imagine if you were suddenly told that all that joy and adrenaline and excitement and obsession you have about something is suddenly redirected and you can't do it anymore ever on a certain day, and that he had to reimagine his life on a day's notice and turned all that passion into building and designing and managing races. And that's so interesting. Then you take a cat like Ken Miles, who spent his prime years fighting World War II as a tank engineer, comes to this country, still wants to be a driver, is also interesting. You know, I'm not a big motorsports guy in that I learned it all watching and making this movie and watching all the research. But Ken Miles is also an example of a day and age when the drivers could also fix their own cars. You know, that these were people who understood, who built the car, were the people who drove the car.
Yeah, you had to sort of wear a couple of hats back then. And a lot of those Shelby guys, there's a guy named John Morton who was a Shelby driver, and then he moved on with Pete Brock. Pete Brock built the Daytona, famously, that won the Manufacturers Championship, as seen in the movie as well. But these guys drove and built their own cars. And
there's a romance to that. I mean, I don't want to say it's better or worse. I think that as we all get more specialized, there is something that we're robbed of, which is that kind of renaissance, man or woman, of racing or of anything, that people who build something, who start from zero and deliver it to the final destination, there's something romantic about that. That as modern life has gone on, we get robbed of. We don't get to understand that kind of pride.
And so when you talk to modern day race car drivers as a gearhead, and they're telling me they're driving an F1 car, and I go, "What's the displacement on the motor?" And they go, "I don't know." Right. And my feeling is like, I get it. They're good at what they do, but if there was a barbecue joint and it was run by a vegan, I wouldn't go in. I want a guy who, you know,
who knows,
lives
pork.
The life.
Yes,
he gets high on his own supply.
Yes. You want that.
And also the cars back then, because I've talked to a lot of these guys who race Le Mans then and now. And then it was a lot of about endurance, reliability. Famously in the movie, I won't give it away, but Phil Remington, the designer, engineer, sort of extraordinaire, comes up with a way to make the brakes last longer and blah, blah, blah. They had to drive. I've interviewed Dan Gurney on this. They had to make those cars last. Now they drive the car at 10 tenths for the whole race because everything's synthetic and the cars are so durable and the computers work and everything and doing everything that they don't have to simultaneously race the car and sort of maintain the car.
No, it is so different now. I mean, what makes Le Mans so interesting, and was for me as I did the research on the movie, was that it is not a race that is all just as it was first created as a race. It wasn't only about winning; it was about surviving. It's a race as old, as you well know, as the automobile itself, and was a way of putting cars on a road and seeing who had built a vehicle that could just stand that kind of usage, that kind of test. A lot of what crosses the finish line at Le Mans is not about people who have fallen in the 10th or 20th position, but usually about people who just fall away in the past. I don't think that's as true anymore. But
no, and there was a strategy. I mean, you'd send one guy out to be the rabbit.
Right.
Hopefully the other guy would chase him and break.
Right.
We show some of that in the picture.
But that is the point. And then you have these cars, because it's a dawning moment in car design, the cars themselves have more personality because they're a little more lopsided. You know, now we've gotten to this kind of tipping point where they can, through computer design and just experience, the cars are all pretty good all around. There was a time when you might have a car that was nimble, but it didn't have the torque that another car had. You might have like the GT40 had all this power, but what they knew from the moment they had kind of put that engine in the GT40, at least as I understand it, they kind of knew they were faster than anyone else. They just didn't know if they could stop or turn. So the reality is each car has such a unique personality, and you get to see these racers and Shelby in the pits, and they're all, and you know, Remington, they're all dealing with the unique personality of the monster they've created. Ferrari too, in the sense that the Ferrari has its advantages and disadvantages.
I noticed a lot of filming at Willow Springs, which is a track I'm very familiar with, and I was thinking
hot there.
Cool.
I mean, the scenes you're shooting, the guys, I don't know how they don't sweat. I never know this about movie stars, just what they do to make the sweat never occur. But we're shooting at 120 degrees, and I have obviously looked like a overheated lobster,
right?
Hulk clinging to a slice of watermelon. But the shoot itself, you don't feel that. You feel the joy of that. Well, it is I was transported back. It made me want to race and drive. Driving out for the weekend with a bunch of gearheads and tooling around one of these beautiful tracks. It's beautiful.
Willow Springs, as I was watching the movie, and I've done a professional Trans Am race and a vintage races and stuff there, it struck me that you didn't have to touch a thing.
We very little.
Because that place hasn't changed since 1957.
And it's thrilling because the real characters were making the movie about race there, and they haven't touched a thing. And what I love about it is it hasn't been turned into some Ed DeBevick Sha-na-na kind of nostalgic thing.
Right.
It just is what it was. It's not been turned into some kind of touristy thing.
There's no Marilyn Monroe mannequin that greets gift shop or anything.
Yeah, it's just the place like it's been always.
I know. I was thrilled watching it. And we're talking to Christian about the car nerds are always like, this bumped me and that bumped me. The only thing in the entire film that bumped me is there was a couple of shots where you were going the wrong way
on track.
Willow Springs.
Yes.
Yes.
Was that in the later sequence when they're testing the car? Because that's what we did intentionally.
I was like, they're going the wrong direction. But I was like, you're the only person in this theater that knows. And
right.
I'm sure
I don't think we shot the races going the wrong
direction.
No. There's a later sequence where they're testing the GT40 when they end up tying the yarn to it that we did shoot. I think we shot it going the wrong way in a couple places.
Yeah. The
Trying to freshen up the shots a little. But no, also, I figure when you were testing on the track, you can drive any which way.
Drive any way you want.
Yeah.
It's such an amazing film, and it's I was worried that I was going to love it, but that America wasn't going to love it because they don't like cars.
That is a central worry of mine, too. I'm glad you
well,
do. But
the story of Ken and his son and what happened to Ken and the sort of tragedy of Ken Miles after I made my doc, when I thought I was just making a doc about sort of Ferrari versus Ford, like the film, and I realized, oh, Ken Miles, this is the human story in this whole big, the big macro-ness of the whole thing, the micro is really Ken, his son, his wife, and his tragedy.
Well, also, he was such a wonderful character. Everyone remembers him with such clarity. And the way his friendship intersected, the way him and Shelby's friendship was so mutually beneficial, how they each needed each other in a way, Ken to be Carol's kind of driver, his almost a projection of himself behind the wheel, and that Ken would never get a chance to drive if it wasn't for Carol, because Ken was a handful, you know, and that to me was so interesting. And then a lot of the relationships were interesting. I found Henry Ford II really interesting. I mean, the idea of being a legacy running this company mm-hmm. that makes kind of slightly boring cars, affordable cars for the working man. And then you have a guy like Enzo, who's much more of a maverick. He's no legacy. He created this company, who makes unaffordable cars for almost no man.
Right.
And each man has something on the corporate side, each man has something the other wants. Ford wants to be cool. Ferrari wants to be solvent.
Right.
You know, and that and it's in so many ways, the characters, it extrapolates out of racing and becomes about all the decisions we make in life and the choices we can make about the type of person we want to be, the way we pursue our goals, that either bankrupt us or enrich us, but we go, how did I get on this track doing this boring shit? And that it's like the efforts to kind of change your track. Even Ford, I'm very moved by Henry Ford. He's trying to change it up. You know, he's trying to, and one great scene where, you know, Matt's character, Shelby, takes Henry Ford II out for a drive. I always find it very moving because you suddenly realize this imperious kind of, intimidating executive is also really living in a bubble and is kind of sad and never gets to taste on the ground level what it is they do.
That actor, is it Tracy Letts?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
He was fantastic,
He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright as well, but he's a
really?
Great actor. Yeah, he's...
And the guy who played Remington, Ray McKinnon, I thought that guy was awesome as well, and it's...
He was in Deadwood. He created a great series for years, and he also is a great writer. It's a really interesting group of people we gathered together.
And the way it was shot was just magnificent.
Thank you.
It looked so good.
Well, great DP, Faden Papamichael, and we've worked together on 5 movies. And I've done a lot of commercials in my life, and I didn't want the movie to look like a car commercial, but I did want it to be beautiful. I wanted you to feel it as real. Like sometimes when you're shooting car commercials, everything gets so creamy and beautiful that every car looks, obviously no one wants to see their car dirty.
Right.
Here, part of the sexiness is the dirt, is the dust, is the sense that they're being used. And one of the interesting factoids I know from my other life making other kinds of movies and also doing this is, you know, a lot of the characters I met, especially the Willow Springs, Southern California racing characters, they all knew George Lucas because mm-hmm. he was a hot rodder and he would hang out. He would sleep on a lot of their couches and was at Willow Springs and all these places. And for those Star Wars fans, part of the reason that all those spaceships, even in the very first Star Wars, the Millennium Falcon, the X-Wings, look so soiled is because of George Lucas's experiences in drag racing and in racing, and that all that exhaust staining and all that stuff was his influence of trying to kind of carry something. It's like, why is everything perfectly clean in outer space?
Right.
It certainly isn't on a track.
Yeah, American Graffiti is Lucas, right?
A great movie. And yeah,
right,
and Harrison Ford plays a drag racer with
Bel Air, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
55? I think he's driving a Bel Air.
It's a great movie if you haven't seen it.
A great soundtrack, too.
It is. It's an impossible to afford soundtrack now.
So they're telling me to bring it home. So I'll heap some praise. I knew the story well. I loved it. And I was confirmed,
Adam,
when I went to Rotten Tomatoes and saw it at 88%, which, again, is an amazing score. Because critics don't like car movies and ones where you burn a lot of fossil fuels and vulcanized rubber. They might deduct a couple of points for that. What's next?
I can't tell you what for sure what's next. I'm working on a couple of things, nothing like this, but something interesting. I mean, I am always trying to move, maybe something with music, maybe something with guns. I don't know. Maybe something in the woods. That's the most I'd say right now.
Jerry Lee Lewis?
No, but good guess.
But well, no. It's guns and music. So congratulations.
Thank you, Adam.
It was just a great film, and in a way, as I told Matt and Christian, I think finding a non-car guy to make this film, to really tell the story and to really make it look as well as it looked. And by the way, for those who watched Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and sort of dug all the 70s, 60s, 70s,
we got that going on.
Vibe, you got that going in spades. I mean, it is a real throwback,
a time capsule. Yeah, well, it's such a great time in this country when people were making things and risking themselves making things. You couldn't figure it out on a computer first. You had to put your body in the chassis and see whether it held together as it made the turn.
Well,
you know,
imagine living in California and in Venice Beach, a guy like Carroll Shelby just showing up and opening up a shop.
No,
like,
it's incredible.
I'm going to hire a bunch of young guys, going to import. Those cars would be impounded. They'd be at the docks. They'd be gray market vehicles.
Yeah.
The EPA would be there going, what are you doing?
It would be impossible. But you think about this. I didn't even put a label on the scenes. But when Shelby American got the deal with Ford to develop the car, they were doing it at LAX. And, well, you well know
sure.
this. But most people don't know this. And that the... You know, because where are you going to drive these cars every day at that kind of speed? Where are you going to find that kind of blacktop? And the airports at that point were closed during most of the night. So they built a garage off of LAX in a hangar. And all that racing you see is, you know, where we land now when we're coming in from New York or LA or Hong Kong or wherever. That was the proving ground for the GT40 with those runways.
Simpler times. James, thank you so much for coming in and sharing some time with us. Ford
My
v
pleasure.
Ferrari Theater, Friday, November 15th. I saw it, and I shall bring my son and see
it's
it again.
It's a good movie. You can bring non-racing people. I think
absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes. Anyway, thank you
Thanks,
so much.
James.
Pleasure.
Everyone's got the to-do list. How about you save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance? Don't have to go anywhere. Go to geico.com. Few minutes, like 15 minutes, could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance. Take that extra money and put it in your pocket, man. It'll be the best thing you do all day. It is Geico. That is geico.com. Well, you're welcome. Bunch of A-listers on a little car show. So, until next time, Sam Carolla. For Matt the Motorator, who's not here, so screw him, saying keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.